All right. So Sunday school, it's basically we're talking about the Sunday school superintendent, but I'm going to cover all of Sunday school because we don't come back to that anyway. So in the ecclesial guide, we have I think it's clause 46 deals with the Sunday school. So if you have that handy, you'll want to pull that up or read it. It is a matter of apostolic command to bring up our children in the enlightenment of the truth. And we have three references. So if you have your Bibles, you want to turn to Ephesians 6, verse 4. And the other two are in that vein, so I'll just read the other two. But this is the apostolic command to bring up our children in the enlightenment of the truth. Ephesians 6 and 4. And ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. And that's one of the things I would call a Christadelphian cliche. And bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. The other reference, Colossians 3:21, fathers, provoke not your children, lest they be discouraged. So again, this is care given, focused on the children, how we are responsible to care for them, lest they be discouraged. 1 Timothy 3 and 4, one that ruleth well his own house, having his children in subjection with all gravity. So it's a standard you can compare a brother against when considering him for an ecclesial duty, whether or not his children are in subjection with all gravity. If that's expected, then that's what we need to do. In the apostolic precept or teaching, this teaching from the apostles is strengthened by every consideration of wisdom, benevolence, and expediency. Though the precept doubtless refers in its primary application to parental instruction, so the precept, obviously you heard fathers do this, fathers do that, so the focus is definitely on parental instruction, still it necessarily extends to every method by which it may be carried out. So that means it's the fathers need a support group, so to speak. It's necessary in every method of the way it's worked out. It extends to every method by which it's carried out. So to raise your children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, it's not just on the fathers or on the parents to do it. It's every method that's available, Sunday school being a big one, and the ecclesial family being a big support there. What we find to be true of secular education or education in the school systems is also true of spiritual education. We cannot effectually do all the work ourselves. So just like kids go to school to learn math, they go to school to learn English, they go to school to learn all these things, even the world doesn't expect one teacher to be able to deliver everything that this child needs across the board. They need to have different teachers bringing what they can. You need a math teacher, you need an English teacher to teach those things. And as parents, we recognize that. Every kid learns differently and every kid has different needs, different encouragement. There's no way that you could expect me to teach my kids whatever. Geography is not too bad, but you know, the finer details of those skills, algebra, math, that you would be like, keep him away from those kids with math. So you need that. You need that from different members of the ecclesia coming together. So as secular education is true, so with spiritual education, we need to have a multitude of teachers bringing to the table what the kids need to learn. Some brethren are very strong in teaching first principles. Some brethren are very strong in teaching prophecy or encouraging in different ways. And so it's good for these kids to see the way the Word lives in our ecclesia and breathes in us, so that what Brother Roger's thinking about is what he's sharing with the kids, and what Brother Josh is thinking about through his studies at that time in life, he's sharing and breathing together with the kids. So we can't be expected to do all the work ourselves. We are greatly helped by the assistance of others. Private endeavor is greatly helped by the power that comes from cooperation in a collective capacity. The most eligible form of this cooperation in the circumstances of modern society, indeed almost the only available form, is the Sunday school. And we have to remember that this is from Brother Robert's time, when Sunday school had a very different role in society than it does in our lives. Growing up as Christadelphians, growing up in the truth, Sunday school is a given. It's what we do. You bring the kids have Sunday school. But earlier, in Brother Robert's time, Sunday school was actually, and keep this in the back of your mind maybe for something we can do in the future, but it was used for the people who were laboring in the workforce, the secular people, to have a place to send their kids to learn how to read and write and learn things that they can't afford to have their 12-year-old boy not work and go to school. So Sunday school was really the only place they could get an education where they could learn to read and write and things like that. So that focus, again, is in Brother Robert's comments. So when he's talking about the objection to a Sunday school, we would be like, what's the objection to having a Sunday school? The objection is that secular mentality of it's there not just for the ecclesia. The Sunday school is there for the community out there, the family next door who they're heathens, you know, or they're not interested in God or the Bible, they're atheists, but their kids have something that they can gain from coming to a Christadelphian Sunday school. So it's just a different way of thinking about it. So that's the secular idea of what is the purpose of a Sunday school. The idea of objecting to it because it's a popular institution will not retain its hold where reason reigns. We may as well give up the use of umbrellas and 100 other things if we're to avoid everything used by the Orthodox community. So it's just ridiculous just to discount an idea because, well, that's what the churches do. And we can't let the good thing or the positive things that the churches or Orthodoxy comes up with to dissuade us from something that might be useful, a useful tool for us as Christadelphians who have the truth. And Sunday school is one of those things. It's a tool that can be used. So looking at from the world's point of view, from the Christianity Today, their view of when Sunday school started, this is from their website. It's important to realize that Sunday schools were originally literary schools. They were places where poor children could learn to read. The Sunday school movement began in Britain in the 1780s. The Industrial Revolution had resulted in many children spending all week long working in factories. Christian philanthropists wanted to free these children from a life of illiteracy. Well into the 19th century, and that's when Brother Roberts was working on the Ecclesial Guide, well into the 19th century, working hours were long. The first modest legislative restrictions came in 1802. This resulted in limiting the numbers of hours a child could work to how many do you think? How many hours could a child work per day? 12. It limited them, which means there was a problem. People are working, you know, 18 hours a day, right? So this is the first legislative action in 1802 to say, guess what? Kids can only work 12 hours. And in today's society, that would be, yeah, you'd go to jail, right? It's just not. But anyway, so that's where the background of the Sunday school. Some Christian philanthropists wanted to make sure that these working child laborers aren't burdened by a life of illiteracy. This limit of 12 hours per day was not lowered again until 1844. Moreover, Saturday was a part of the regular work week. And so Sunday, therefore, was the only available time for these children to gain an education, some education. The Christian evangelical Robert Raikes, so this guy, Robert Raikes, he was born in 1725, lived to 1811. He was the key promoter of the movement, and it soon spread to America as well. So, again, this is the background as to why Brother Roberts would be concerned as to trying to quell any ideas that Sunday school is a secular activity. Because it grew from these Christian orthodoxy to have a Sunday school to help people. Denominations and non-denominational organizations caught the vision and energetically began to create Sunday schools. Within decades, the movement had become extremely popular. By the mid-19th century, Sunday school attendance was a near universal aspect of childhood. Even parents who did not regularly attend church themselves generally insisted that their children go to Sunday school. Working class families were grateful for this opportunity to receive an education. They also looked forward to annual highlights such as prize days, parades, picnics, Sunday school picnics, which came to mark the calendars of their lives as much as more traditional seasonal holidays. So that's the background of where Sunday school, what we take for granted, that's where it came from, a benefit to not just our children, which we need to raise them in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, but an opportunity to help those in the community around us. A Sunday school, and back to Brother Robert's words, a Sunday school is a good thing if the truth is taught in it, because the truth is not taught in the popular Sunday schools that they are of no use to the brethren and sisters. So we have no use for their Sunday schools. If we lived in isolation and there was a Baptist church down the street, there would be no advantage to a brother or sister sending their kids at least they're going to be reading their Bible. That's unacceptable. That's ridiculous. But if we would have a Sunday school and invite their kids, there's no harm in them coming, given the teachers in our Sunday school are responsible brethren and sisters, which we hope, and we'll get into that. But so let them have Sunday schools of their own, and the difficulty is removed. Don't try and meld, let's get together and have Sunday school with the church down the street. No, let them have their own, and the difficulty is removed. There's no problem with our Sunday schools, and not that we have a problem anyway. But there will, in this, be an advantage both to the children and to the brethren and sisters who take part. It is a work requiring and calling into exercise benevolence and patience. And anybody who's worked with children know you need to have benevolence and patience. And this is the case in almost any other form of work in the truth. One incentive to continue in it lies in the fact that it is one form of that well-doing upon patient continuance in which our entrance into life everlasting is predicated. And that's from Romans 2, verse 7, if you want to make a note in your ecclesial guide. To them who by patient continuance in well-doing, that's what we as brethren and sisters, not just in Sunday school, but in our daily life, every breath you take, this side of the kingdom and beyond, every breath you take needs to be by patient continuance and well-doing. That's the whole point. To them who by patient continuance and well-doing, they seek for glory, honor, immortality, and ultimately eternal life. Romans 2 and 7. So another benefit to this is to be found in the fact that although the fruits of the work are slow in coming, sometimes 18, 20, 23 years for some, right? But the fruits are long coming. I mean, you plant a fruit tree, you expect fruit. I don't know, Malcolm, but if you were to plant a peach tree, how long would you expect before you had fruit on that tree that you could eat?
Why you got a really decent, probably 7 or 8 years.
So that's 7 or 8 years for a fruit tree. You have a kid, that's double that again, at least, until they're 14 before you start to see any real fruit. So it's long coming. So again, that's where that patience comes from. Although the fruits of the work are slow in coming, yet they do come at last in the acquaintance of the children with divine things, and in the improving effect which this acquaintance more or less ultimately produces. So, two great things that come from working in the Sunday school as an ecclesia. The Sunday school should be under the auspices, the supports or sponsorship. The Sunday school should be under the support of the ecclesia. So here's the ecclesia, and we need to get together and talk about really deep things and prophecy and all of these really deep things. But the Sunday school needs to be supported by the brethren and sisters in the ecclesia. That is, it ought not to be left to the private initiative and responsibility of one or two brethren. It's not up to the Sunday school superintendent to make sure everything's going okay with the Sunday school. We don't say, check, we elected a great brother to do Sunday school superintendent job to take care of the kids. That's not where you just wash your hands and get it done. You have to make sure the whole ecclesia is supported, watching, listening, caring for the Sunday school and the members thereof. So it's not left to just one or two brethren or sisters to make sure everything's getting done. It is a work that the brethren, in their collective capacity, all of us, all the brethren and sisters, should approve and encourage. We should all be approving this situation, and we should all be encouraging. When we have a Sunday school picnic, we don't say, well, I'm not going to go to the Sunday school picnic because I'm going to go read Eureka, and that's much more. No, we need to encourage the work of the Sunday school, right? And get those young kids to want to read Eureka with us. You know, that's the whole point of breathing the truth together as an ecclesia. So in their collective capacity, they should approve and encourage and have control of, and which at the same time should be sufficiently in the hands of the teachers, the ones who are actually sitting down with the kids and seeing what the needs are of this core group of kids that they're responsible for. So it's the control should be sufficiently in the hand of the teachers to give them a complete interest in it. So the control of the ecclesia should only be a power in reserve. So not that the ecclesia needs to meddle in every single little detail. They need to be aware and watching, but the control of the ecclesia should be a power in reserve. They should be watching. The practical arrangement should be left with the teachers, with a power of appeal in the case of anything wrong. So obviously you don't want to sit down and say, I'm going to have to sit in with Sister Kim's class because the stuff my kids are learning is just not, you know, that's not the way you deal with it. The teacher has the ultimate control. You appoint teachers to teach the Sunday school class, and they have the ultimate control over that. But there is a power of appeal in the case of anything wrong. So if something's wrong, the ecclesia, because they're all involved in caring for the Sunday school, they have a way of communicating any concern, cares or concerns. Not that we would, but if there is an issue, that's dealt with properly. And the teachers don't feel like their creativity in teaching these little guys, the little minds they're not squelched in their creativity. You know, they don't feel a burden in that way. So the ecclesia sufficiently identifies itself with the work in recognizing it, providing funds for it, and in appointing the superintendent, secretary, and treasurer. The teachers, on the other hand, who do the work, having the power to decide all the practical arrangements. And that would be like the teaching curriculum. That's why we have Sunday school teachers meetings. The teachers get together and they talk about what kind of curriculum do the kids need. And really, it's in the teacher's hand to say, I teach math well, for example, and so we're going to learn math. Or I teach this well. I want to go through this book well. You know, just as an example. So the teachers who do the work, they have the power to decide all the practical arrangements subject to the reserve power of the ecclesia. Obviously, we're not going to have somebody teaching Baptist principles to our kids. You know, you have to be subject to what the ecclesia deems as okay to be teaching. And subject to, so the teachers, on the other hand, who do the work, having the power to decide all the practical arrangements subject to the reserve power of the ecclesia, will sufficiently feel that the work is theirs, the teachers, to be enabled to continue their interest in it from year to year. So you don't want this job to teaching these kids to be a burden. You want them to continue their interest and excitement and zeal forever in working with these kids in the Sunday school. By this means, we get all the good that the school is capable of yielding while discharging our collective duty as the servants of the truth. So that's from the Ecclesial Guide, Clause 33, I think it was. Maybe page 33? I don't know. I didn't make a clear enough note there. Page 34. So that's in the Ecclesial Guide. So just to summarize again, all the members of the Ecclesia are responsible for this duty. And I just want to jump down to point 37 in the Ecclesial Guide on page 40. I think this is under the section of... is it on page 40? Clause 37? What does that say? Yeah. Is that section rules? Yeah. So under that section, he comes back and does a little summary paragraph on Sunday school, and that's, I think, Brother Ralph's class eventually, a few months from now, when he goes over the whole system of rules embodying the foregoing conclusions. But 37 says that any Sunday school established in connection with the ecclesia shall be under the official cognizance or awareness thereof. So the Sunday school, there's not going to be a private Sunday school saying, well, the ecclesia doesn't want to have a Sunday school, I'm going to have one at my house. No, it's an official, the ecclesia needs to be officially aware of the Sunday school. The ecclesia is to elect annually superintendent, secretary, and treasurer, who shall appoint the teachers and, in conjunction with them, manage the school and matters of detail. Any brother in the ecclesia, brother or sister in the ecclesia, shall have the power of appeal to a special meeting of the ecclesia in case of objection to the acts, proceedings, or arrangements of the superintendent and teachers. So that's basically the way he summed up and how we should apply that rule as an ecclesia. Obviously, we have a Sunday school superintendent and an assistant Sunday school superintendent. We don't have the secretary and the treasurer. But I think it's just the way we do it. But the fact that any brother shall have the power of appeal to a special meeting. So if you recognize something as a member of the ecclesia going wonky in the Sunday school, you have that power of appeal. Call a special meeting of the ecclesia and say, I'm seeing this and I'm concerned. You know, open your Bible. So we're all responsible for the care of our youth. Every one of us, every member of the ecclesia is responsible. And it's important to all, because what we have, for example, you have H.P. Mansfield back in his day, when he was dealing with the challenges in his ecclesia, you had a lot of people wearing... This is my interpretation of it. I wasn't there. This is probably third or fourth hand, but this is my interpretation of the way things were. So take that for what it's worth. But you had these people in the ecclesia wearing their black suits, black ties, and doing their thing, being all stuffy and serious. And here's HP wearing his little short knickers, being the crazy guy, excited and zealous about the truth. He would take the youth of the ecclesia and fire up the youth about the Bible. Get them in the Bible, open the books and teach them about the pioneer works, about what the Bible says off to the side. He didn't, but that shows his character of caring for the next generation, the youth that are coming up. They're going to have to deal with ecclesial challenges. Robert Roberts, obviously we see that in the volume, and we'll get to more of this about Robert Roberts, but the care that he puts in for the youth, for the next generation, because they're going to be facing challenges that make our challenges almost laughable you know, and there's challenges that I'm facing in the ecclesia that Brother Malcolm never dreamt of when he was growing up in the truth. You know, gay marriage, things like that. It's just, for example, you know, it's when I was growing up, gay marriage, you call somebody gay to insult them, and now it's like dealing with gay marriage. It's just ridiculous. Something that Malcolm never dreamt would be a challenge. There's things like that. That just growing up. But ultimately, what it is humanism. And the humanistic tendencies that the world is driving into our minds, saying, as long as it feels good, it's okay. As long as you don't hurt anybody and you're happy, it's okay. That whole message is just being driven home. And there's really only two ways. There's our way, our natural way of thinking, and there's God's way of thinking. That's it. And it's so easy to embrace what's natural to us. And it's so hard to encourage getting God's ways of thinking into our minds. But it's a challenge. It's been the same challenge since Adam and Eve, when she looked at that fruit on the tree. The introduction of the serpent thinking into her mind and accepting that serpent thinking, which was opposed to God's thinking. So you had our natural way of thinking, the serpent mind versus the godly mind. And that's the whole point of being in an ecclesia together. That's the whole point of the Sunday school, is to try and get those kids, get the youth, the next generation, zealous about God's way of thinking. And we can't expect that we're simply going to be able to have a Sunday school and that 1 hour spent a week is going to undo all of the worldly philosophies and doctrines that they're bombarding our children with. The world isn't afraid of us having a Sunday school, but we should be afraid of them having our Sunday school students. They have the advantage. Because what's naturally coming to our kids, the world just wants to keep promoting that. And they're not afraid of you planting the seeds of the truth because they have the advantage. But we need to get rid of their advantage, and that's by getting them back to the book. And the best way to do that is by example. But Sunday school is one of our biggest tools, is that Sunday school, getting them excited about the Bible and the truth of the Bible. So we must, as an ecclesia, be united in standing against the weapons that the world is using against us and our children. So if that weapon, and the world will minimize the weapons, it's a Trojan horse. They wheel it in. Doesn't this look nice? There's nothing wrong with this. There's nothing wrong with enjoying this together. It's fellowship. It's happy. It's a good time. It's a Trojan horse, because the ideas and philosophies that are being planted from those things are going to keep popping in their heads and attack them from within. Those are weapons. The Trojan horse, it's a big horse, a big straw horse. It's a weapon, okay? And those weapons are pointed at us and at our children. And the only way we can fight against that, there's no use being in the city with the Trojan horse and me going out and trying to attack this horse. We as an ecclesia need to fight against the Trojan horses, the weapons that the world is trying to get into our lives, into our kids' lives. And we need to be united and not minimize those dangers by saying, well, it's okay. It's not that dangerous. It is very dangerous because it's dangerous. They're after their minds. They want their way of thinking to be their way of thinking and not God's way of thinking. So Ephesians 6, verses 11 and 12, this is the armor of God. So the wiles of the devil, those Trojan horses of the world, those weapons that the world is using against us, whatever those weapons happen to be, in my life it's music, in your life it might be something else, I don't know. But those wiles of the devil that they're using against us to lower our defenses so that we don't have our guard up as much, we need to recognize those together as an ecclesia so that we might be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, So we're not out there actually fighting. There's the kids out there spreading the leaflets this afternoon, they're not out there to slay people with a literal sword. They're fighting against principalities and powers and against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. These are the thoughts. These are the people who are going to take the piece of paper that our kids are out there giving them, throw it in the trash, and turn on the TV instead of coming here. That's the wiles of the devil. Those are the thoughts. That's the weapons that they're embracing. So they would rather do their thing rather than come here and learn God's ways of thinking, which we have through the Word of God, who we all love, which we all as an ecclesia love to study. So along that same line of reasoning, 2 Corinthians 10, verses 2 through 6, again, carrying along that same line of reasoning, that's the same thought process. For though we walk in the flesh, we don't war after the flesh. We're not going to go out on the sidewalk with a baseball bat and say, come inside or I'm going to bash you in. We're not fighting against that. We're not fighting against a physical threat. If they want to come in here and kill us all because we're standing for the truth, then we rejoice in suffering that for Christ's sake. We're not fighting against flesh. The weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty, through God to the pulling down of strongholds, casting down imaginations, those things that we imagine. Oh, it's a fictitious story. Isn't it wonderful to think about these things? Imaginations. Let's dream up stories. And every high thing that exalteth itself against the knowledge of God. So you only have so much room in your brain. And you're either going to put the knowledge of God in there, or you're going to put these imaginations or high things that exalt itself against the knowledge of God. And that's humanism. Those are the seeds that humanists plant so that they will grow against saying, that's foolish. To the Greeks, Christ on the cross, that's foolishness. You're crazy for believing that. You're crazy for believing what your Sunday school teachers teach you. You're crazy for believing what your parents teach you. That's humanism, because they want to turn our kids' minds against us, and especially against God as an authority in their life. Their battle cry, question authority. We question authority, but we accept authority as coming from God, revealed in the Scriptures. So casting down imaginations, every high thing that exalteth itself against the knowledge of God, bringing into captivity every thought to the obedience of Christ. So, and having a readiness to revenge all disobedience when your obedience is fulfilled. So we're to bring into captivity every thought to the obedience. So your heart beats. What you're doing right now, would Christ be doing that? Bring that thought, what you're doing, to Christ. And if you're sitting there doing something and you say, would Christ be doing this? And your answer is no, then you have to really ask yourself, should I be doing this? Is this thought acceptable to bring before Christ? I mean, it's that simple, and we have to examine every thought on that level, everything that we do, and we all fail. I fail. You know, we're doing something. We're listening to the music that we know, if Christ was sitting in the car next to me, I wouldn't have on. I wouldn't be seeing these things if He was here. Yet those are the things that I need to bring to subjection, because those are the high things, the imaginative things that I love. But they need to be in subjection to the knowledge of God. I know what God finds acceptable. There's only one way to know what God finds acceptable, and that's through the Bible. To know, to have the knowledge of God. So that's basically what we're fighting against as an ecclesia, and why the Sunday school is so crucial to keeping these kids united again and get them excited about the knowledge of God. So some of the things you'll hear in today's generation is don't judge. They love to say don't judge me. Well, what they're saying is, don't criticize me, and the word is escaping me at this point, but not condemn. Well, yeah, we're not supposed to condemn, but we are definitely supposed to evaluate right from wrong. We're supposed to know appropriate from inappropriate. We know these things. Not that we can say, you're wearing that, you're not going to be in the kingdom, and you shouldn't be in the ecclesia. That's the judge that we're not supposed to do. But we're definitely supposed to say, this memorial, we've come together this morning to remember the life and sacrifice of the king of the planet. What you're wearing is not appropriate. Okay? That's That's the consideration, the evaluation that we have, but we don't condemn them saying, well, you wear that, then you're not going to be in the kingdom. But they like to just blanket everything and say, don't judge me, and that's not the point. Because they want an excuse to do what I want to do. And that's my greatest desire as growing up as a humanist. I can tell you, I want to do what I want to do. And you can't judge me and make me do what you want to do. And that's just my natural tendency whenever anyone challenges what I'm doing as a person. So I need to bring those thoughts to subjection to Christ. And we need to help our kids bring their thoughts and understand what judging is. And the fact that there is something that is appropriate at a certain time. Going to a funeral in Africa is very different than going to a funeral in the United States. So we don't expect the people in Africa to wear a suit and a tie to a funeral or to a memorial service, but we do expect them to wear what they would wear if their king or leader died. You know, it's that kind of thinking about it. What's appropriate? And that is okay to, whatever that word is, criticize. Not critique. Anyway, I'll think of it when the tape stops. And the whole fact that we have to care for the weaker. We have to care in the ecclesia for the weaker vessel and not just forge ahead and do what I want to do because it's what I want to do. And you're just trying to hold me hostage by your emotional weakness. That's not the attitude that we have. We care for the weaker. And if me liking this kind of music causes brother or sister so-and-so to stumble, then I need to get rid of that kind of music from my life. Whether I think it's right or wrong, even if I think it's right, I still need to get rid of that from my life for the sake of the brother. Even if they are holding me emotionally hostage or I come up with some other lame excuse, I need to put that away for the sake. I would not eat meat. I won't eat meat if it causes this person to stumble. That's the care for the weaker. We remove the stumbling stones. Set it to the side to point the way and so that our brother or sister doesn't stumble. Because we're here as a vapor, a breath. And we have to care for the weaker. And that care needs to show in our conduct of Sunday school, the way we have our Sunday school, the way that every member of the ecclesia cares for how the Sunday school is doing, that we support the Sunday school. We don't say, well, I'm going to come here for meeting and go home because Sunday school is not important or I can learn more on my own. That's not the attitude. We need to be here as an ecclesia supporting the Sunday school and watching and helping in any way we can. And back to Brother Roberts, he has it laid out and he did if you really sit down and look at a lot of his works, obviously he has there's great works, Christendom Astray, all of these, the blood of Christ, the atonement, all the challenges he had on the really deep issues and the lectures on Revelation. But you step back and look at the material he presented or created simply for the Sunday school and the care for the youth, the care for that next generation. He took it very seriously. And he came up with a little book, I don't know, probably all of us have seen it, the Catechism, the Christadelphian Catechism. It's just a series of questions I think it's about 100 or so questions that you ask and then the kids answer the right answer given in the book, which a humanist mind would just pop at. But, there's a series of questions, answers with references. questions, answers with reference. There's 100 of them. So.
It was called the Christadelphian Instructor.
Yes, the Christadelphian Instructor. So in the beginning of that, he has this section about the conduct of Sunday schools. And the material, again, I just want to emphasize the fact that Brother Roberts took this work just as seriously as he did dealing with atonement issues or whatever other issues. The conduct of Sunday schools was important, very important to Brother Roberts. Same with H.P. Mansfield, same with, you know, caring for that next generation, because we're not here forever. And the fact that we're going to have a public lecture and most of these chairs will be empty except for our kids, it's like we have a captive audience, and they're our primary responsibility of getting them in the truth first. We can preach to them the truth in everything we do, daily life, the example we set forth in the lectures we give. They can hear the message. But that's so important. Brother Roberts did not minimize that one bit, saying, well, let the sisters take care of the kids. He laid out, through the Christadelphian Instructor, he had a series of magazines where he would do children's magazines, you know, contributed together by other members of in the Brotherhood. But it was a children's magazine, which we see in Logos. They have the good company. Yeah. So it's a theme, but it's a critical part of our community as Christadelphians to care for and be concerned with the next generation. But it basically lays out the way he would see. And if you have the Christadelphian Instructor, at the beginning there's this, his breakdown of how he sees a Sunday school being broken out. It goes into the classes, the class breakdown, the different offices, superintendent, secretary, treasurer, scholars. Oh, and this is interesting. The scholars should consist mainly of the children of the brethren and sisters, but the school should be open to any child willing to come. Plant that seed some more. So I don't know if it's something we could actually invite the community to come to our Sunday school, because the world wants our kids' brains. They want to implant in our kids' heads this humanist philosophy. We're fighting the same weapons. We have the same weapons available. Let's try and encourage God's way of thinking into their kids too. Something we can try.
It's not pleasing to do that.
Yeah.
Just from the outside, maybe a little bit or whatever, becomes a...
Yeah.
Well, when we're in Maine, we tried that. We sent out letters to everybody in the area of the chapel that we rented.
Right. Yeah. So then he has the class breakdowns. He has it actually into six classes. Children 16 and above should be in a senior class. But because we're such a small group, we make it work through the Sunday school teachers meetings to make sure the divisions are with parents and the divisions are what's right at that point in time for the kids. It would be nice to have a big group where we could break into six different classes and have a regimented thing, but you have to do what's right for our ecclesia at this any given time. He actually talks about it's best for the males and females to be separated into two separate classes. We basically wouldn't have an adult Sunday school if we took his breakdown, because everybody would have their own kid teaching him. But it's interesting, just shows you the signs of the time, the environment that Brother Roberts was in when he was writing this. He talks about the teachers, he talks about the class books, and then he talks about the meeting of the teachers to talk about the affairs of the school, how things are going, the working of the school, mode of conduct. He actually breaks down, you know, line by line, distribution of small punctuality tickets to those who were present at the hour of commencing. You can see where if we were to have neighborhood youth involved, where you'd want to have more of a reward for attendance kind of thing. You know, punctuality, being there on time and being there. So that there's a lot of that in his breakdown. Singing of a hymn, opening with prayer, classwork, and then he has a point system, attendance, punctual attendance, good behavior, saying your lesson without help or mistake, giving the best answers to questions put. Humanists would have a field day with that, exalting one kid above another. It's a big no-no in today's society. Bringing a Bible and hymn book. And one of the things he says, entering these marks, all these point systems, the teacher should be sternly just. There's no room for, well, I'm going to give Johnny an extra point because I don't want him to get behind. The teacher needs to be sternly just. Some teachers, from mistaken kindness, enter all the points alike, and thus the very object of entering the marks is lost. Just a different way of thinking in today's society, you know. But that's the whole point. You have these points so that you can be sternly just about it. And then at the signal, the class stops, they sing a hymn, and then they close with prayer. During school, it should be a fixed rule that no child should be allowed to leave the room during classwork. You can't leave. So, you have a very stern handling of the time. Quarterly address. This is another interesting one. It's an advantage to the school to have one Sunday in 13 occupied by an address from some brother who may have the knack of interesting children. It breaks the monotony of schoolwork and introduces an agreeable and profitable variety. So, one in 13, you have brother so-and-so come in and do a class, just a guest speaker. Quarterly address. Prizes. Written examination. I like this idea. Once a year, Sunday school should be devoted to answering of written or printed questions based upon the scriptural readings of the previous 12 months. So having final exams for Sunday school. I don't know. I like that idea. But anyway, so that's it just gives it a more serious tone, because the world is taking a very serious tone and planting their message. It doesn't do us any good lowering our seriousness about getting God's word into our kids. Bible reading. It's also found to work well in some schools to give a prize to all boys and girls reading the Bible every day by the Bible Companion. Again, getting that word into them every day. So you do it. You do your readings every day. Is a prize. Funds. This is, again, we do it differently, but Sunday school conducted on such a plan involves some expense. In some ecclesias, this is liberally covered by a second collection after the ordinary weekly collection once in 6 months. We just do a collection every Sunday for the kids. I don't see any need to do it differently. It's worked for 30 years, but just interesting. So Brother Roberts, again, had a very deep care for the youth, and it's shown. If you get your hands on those magazines, it's a wealth of material for making up Bible games or making up things for the kids to do. There's a lot in there. And then obviously we talked about the ecclesial, the instructor, and those series of questions. Oh really? Yeah. Yeah,
yeah.
Hmm?
I didn't know it was still around.
Yeah. Do you really?
That was the declaration. That was, yeah.
Declaration of the Truth is awesome. We put that with Anna and alumni. We marked the whole thing in that our Bible. What do we think about God? And a whole paragraph about what to say to somebody, and then all the verses that back it up.
Hmm. Yeah. So maybe something we can think about next year, maybe doing that series, having everybody stand up, and as you can't answer a question, you sit down or something. I don't know. Just thinking off the top of my head. But just getting it back, so everybody's aware of it and they're using it. Because there's tons of resources. We don't have to reinvent. We just have to use what we have. And again, there's children from the children's magazine. I stumbled across this. It's the books of the Bible. It said in parentheses, commit this to memory. Your mother will give you a sixpence, perhaps. You know. But it's not just it's a poem that teaches the books of the Bible, but it doesn't just teach you the book of the Bible. It teaches you a thing about it. Like, for example, in Genesis, the world was made by God's creative. Let me start over. In Genesis, the world was made by God's creative hand. In Exodus, the Hebrews march to gain the promised land. Leviticus contains the law, holy, just, and good. Numbers records the tribes enrolled, all sons of Abraham's blood. Moses in Deuteronomy records God's mighty deeds. In Joshua, into Canaan's land, the host of Israel speeds, and it goes on. So you have this little thing about what's in each book. So you have an idea when you get to Malachi. What's in Malachi? You know, hey, it's about this or that. So, but again, that's all I have. I just want to again emphasize that point. We have to devote our efforts to the youth as much as we do to our preaching efforts to those that are dwelling in darkness, because the weapons of this world's warfare, they're poised and ready to take our children if we let them. Any questions, comments?